Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and a very warm welcome into RNIB Tech Talk, our opportunity as blind or partially sighted people to get together each week and explore the world of technology. And don't forget, of course, Tech Talk, it's your show. You can contact us via email, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's T-E-C-H-T-A-L-K @rnib.org.uk. Coming up this week, Callum Stoneman will be trying that new Access AI feature from Aira for describing images. Hubert Pavalkovich, well, he's cooking up a storm in the kitchen with the new Cobalt Talking air fryer. Plus, we'll be hearing about the latest range of reading devices from the RNIB Products for Life team. Welcome in to our co-hosts, Callum Stoneman, Hubert Pavalkovich. Let's see what's on your tech radars this week. Callum, let's come to you first.
Well, I think you're going to like this one, Dave, because it concerns technology and Braille. So I think this will be interesting. So there's been a bit of controversy, let's just say, over the last couple of years over Android devices not supporting this HID standard, this human interface device standard for Braille displays, or at least it doesn't support it over Bluetooth. I think there's ways of getting them to work over USB, and we can go into the detail of what that means, but essentially some Braille displays wouldn't work with Android devices. But in Android 15, which is currently in beta at the minute, developer beta, so it's not out to everyone yet, but coming later this year, I imagine, they've finally added support for this, and according to early beta testers, it's working pretty well.
Encouraging to hear work is happening there. I'm not sure how much the HID standard for Braille displays has really caught on. I know some of the manufacturers have implemented it, but how widely is it used generally? I don't know.
I mean, I know HumanWare have gone all in on this. So like they're, I think the Mantis and the Brilliant, like that sort of range of Braille displays was the big one, because they were obviously the latest Braille displays from HumanWare at the time. I think they still are. And, you know, they weren't supported and there was no option to have them be supported really on Android devices. So like, for example, my Mantis Q40, I can connect it to all my other devices, you know, my Apple devices, my phone, my Mac, my Windows laptop, and that's absolutely fine. But for, if I want to connect it to my Android phone, I can connect it, but I'll only get keyboard support. I won't get any Braille output. And I think there's ways you can plug it into via USB, and then you can use BRLTTY to get support. But you're getting into the kind of too hard range for most people when you get to things like that. So hopefully this will give native support to that and to any other Braille displays going forward that are using this.
Yeah, it must work. And what you're telling us is that on Android now, it will work going forward.
Yeah, as far as we know, yeah.
Yeah.
Early indications suggest that.
Yeah, and presumably your device has to have Android 15, does it? Or do you think it'll trickle back?
Yeah, I imagine. I mean, I'm not certain, but yeah, I imagine it would. You'd have to be using a device that would run Android 15.
Yeah. And of course, the HID standard, this is to just make it work, right? Because we used to talk about plug and pray back in the day, where you connect a device like a Braille display and you might have to go tinkering around with drivers and all the rest of it. And the whole premise of this is that if the HID standard is implemented properly, then you can just connect and go.
Yeah, exactly. Because normally you'd have to download, you might have to download a specific driver for your Braille display to work with JAWS or to work with NVDA. But yeah, the whole idea with this is that you just get your Braille display, turn it on, go into the settings on your device, it shows up, you connect it, and then, you know, off you go.
Lovely stuff. Right, well, we will watch this with interest. Let us know if you're using Android on Braille. How's it going? What do you like? What don't you like? What could be better? Hubert?
I've signed up for a beta to hopefully test this at some point. So Envision, the company that have got the Envision glasses and the Envision AI, they are now working on Envision Assistant. Sort of, kind of an, I imagine, as an AI version of, you know, ChatGPT, something like that kind of thing, something similar along these lines. I've seen demos of this, And it's an assistant with a personality, shall we say. It's got quite a sarcastic personality from what I've heard. So it's still very early days, but it'll be interesting what this project comes to. I'm currently waiting to join the beta program, so it'll be interesting from what I've seen from the early demos. It's nice to have a kind of a visual assistant that will help you recognize things, but with a little bit of personality to it.
Do you like that? Do you like your talking tech to be a little bit sassy? I remember when Siri first came along and you know, and Alexa and all that, and they did at first have a kind of a almost like a cheekiness about them, right? And that seems to have disappeared as far as I can tell.
I quite love a personality. I mean, you're not going to escape this tech. This tech's here to stay and it is there to help us. But I'm someone that is quite sarcastic and such, so I kind of like the AI to have a similar approach just because it adds an extra spice to it, adds a bit of an element to it and a bit more human-like element, human-like interaction.
I don't know if you've read The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, where the technology in that science fiction work had personality. There was the depressed android, there was the overly cheerful shipboard computer, and I don't know, Callum?
I don't know. Yeah, I have read about this. Again, I'm not on the beta list for this yet, this Envision Assistant, but it does sound kind of interesting. I guess it's useful for scene descriptions. You know, if you've got these, say these Envision glasses get to a point where you can just walk around and it describes what's going on. I can see it being useful then. There's a time and a place, isn't there? There's a time where you just want the facts. You just want a straight description. You know, what is this? What's going on here? But then for, if it is being used to describe scenes as you're walking and being used for orientation, then yeah, maybe a bit of a personality could be quite nice. I mean, it's only like going around with a sighted person and they would, you know, do a bit of, I think we've all been there with someone doing a bit of people watching. You know, it's only that kind of thing, I guess.
Personality mode off. Yeah. I need a setting for it. All right. Well, cheers, chaps. Appreciate that. Stick around. We have another tech talk. As blind and partially sighted people, we've never had so many options for reading books and documents and other text. Of course, many of us use apps on our phones, but there are times when we still need to read the printed word. Well, here to help us navigate three of the standalone reading options from RNIB's Products for Life team, it's Louise Kenny. Welcome back to RNIB Connect Radio. Louise, you've got a new product for reading printed text.
Yes, thank you, Dave. So the new product of the range is the Hark Reader from Humanware. And the Hark Reader has a built-in camera which allows to scan your newspaper articles, your books, and your everyday letters that come through the post.
And some of that print can be pretty tiny, right?
Yes, so the Hark Reader allows us to scan anything that from a 6-point right up until a 72-point font.
I mean, what's this device feel like? What's the kind of the form factor? Is it something that we have to kind of set up on a table, or is it a bit more portable?
It's a portable device, but you do need space. So say, for example, the largest page it will hold is an A4 page, which gives you a rough idea of how big or how wide the base would need to be. It is portable, so you can fold it down, pack it up and take it to your lessons if you're studying. And
right, and do we have to be plugged in?
So it does hold the built-in battery and it lasts up to 12 hours.
Excellent. So that's going to run all day pretty much.
Yes.
Yeah. And why do you think it's important that we have standalone devices like this? Of course, many of us are using apps on our phones to do a little bit of spot reading. What's the benefit of having a standalone dedicated scanning device like this?
I think this is ideal for someone who is studying, but equally for someone who doesn't have Wi-Fi at home, or for someone who's a bit apprehensive about some of the advanced technology that is available out there. So something like this is very straightforward to use.
And it works with slightly more complex material as well, as I understand it. It's not just a simple letter. This is going to work with documents that have multiple columns and things like that.
Yes, so we can do your newspaper article or your bank statements.
Right, Okay, so the Hark Reader, a premium standalone scanning device for recognizing the printed word, even if that text is really tiny, down to 6 points. So that's obviously a premium option, probably a funded purchase with access to work or disabled students allowance. We do have some other ways to read though, Louise.
We do. So we have the Community Player. So for anyone who is familiar with the RNIB Community Clock, the Community Player is designed with the exact same shape. So the Community Player is black with a white tactile button on the top, with a black unit and then a white base. So it's one device. There's a rigid speaker, and then underneath that there is the volume controller to scroll up and down to adjust the volume.
Okay, and the Community Player is designed for reading RNIB talking books from a USB memory stick, right?
Exactly, for the memory stick or the pen drive. I know some people refer to it as different names. There's a port on the back where you simply slot in the memory stick, and then it'll say that it's switched on, and play your book.
And again, you don't need to be familiar with using a smartphone or be on the Wi-Fi or anything like that.
No, not at all.
Excellent. Okay. And then the final product we're going to talk about today is Accord.
Yeah, so the Accord, it's a really nice, slick device. It's fairly new. So it would be small, but like slightly larger than a coffee mug. There are two tactile buttons, and that is for the volume. So you've got your tactile plus and volume down control for up and down. Again, for listening to your audiobooks, you can slot in. There's a port for slotting in your memory stick or pen drive. This one's Bluetooth, so if you do have a smartphone, you can pair it up and then listen to your music as well.
Right, I was going to ask you that, the difference between the Community Player and the Accord, because they're both USB players. They will both play talking books from USB sticks, but the Accord a bit more sophisticated because you can use it as a Bluetooth speaker as well.
Yeah, and this one out of the two, probably, for example, if you had it on your bedside table and you knocked it over, this one, to be honest, would be stronger and would hold. It wouldn't damage.
No, it's a bit more rugged. And I think...
It is.
And I think with the Accord as well, you've got wireless charging there.
You do. So there's a little, like a little plate that you can set it on, and that'll charge it up, or you can just plug in the charger to the main supply.
Okay. So the Hark Reader for reading printed text of all sorts of shapes and sizes, and then the Community Player and Accord that will read books from USB memory sticks, and as you mentioned there, the Accord perhaps a bit more rugged, wireless charging, and you can double it up as a Bluetooth speaker. Fantastic, Louise. How do listeners learn more about these products and get in touch for the latest pricing information?
To learn more about our RNIB products, you can visit the RNIB shop website at shop.rnib.org.uk, or you can phone our RNIB helpline on 0303 123 9999.
Louise Kenny from RNIB's Products for Life team, thank you so much for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you very much.
Now on Tech Talk, it's time to get cooking. So a while back, we have mentioned the talking air fryer. Now, we couldn't get hold of one for a while, but I've got one here in front of me from Cobalt. So yes, we're going to be doing some cooking as two hungry guide dogs stand behind me. Unfortunately, they can't have any of it. Right, so you have the talking Cobalt air fryer. It's not the biggest unit. It looks a little bit like a dome, but not full dome because it's got a flat top. It's a single drawer air fryer at the moment, unfortunately. There are rumours of a two drawer version coming out, coming from Cobalt directly, apparently. So watch the space, but we will use this version. The first start is to insert the drawer, and it is fairly easy to insert as you can feel where it needs to be pushed in. And you've heard that click, which means the drawer is now inserted. Now, the fryer is facing with the pan handle towards me, and there's a button on top of a handle which you can slide away from you
to then move the draw back out. And then you can push it back in. So the buttons on the front of the air fryer, what you need to remember is they are touch sensitive buttons. So they are not press buttons, physical buttons, which I think would be quite easier, but you can get used to the touch sensitive buttons. They are ordered in an upside down letter C, if you can imagine. So I will go through the buttons from left round to the right. So the first button I come to is the arrow down button, where you can decrease either the time or the temperature, which you can switch between, as I'll come to in a minute. The button below that is
cook vegetables 160 degrees C 30 minutes, cook meat 180 degrees C 15 minutes, cook poultry 190 degrees C 20 minutes, default 200 degrees C 18 minutes.
You can switch through presets, which can be quite handy, and if you don't like the presets, you can always set up your own custom time and temperature according to whatever recipe you are using for whatever food you are making. Next, we have the power button, which you use to start your cooking. Following that, going around the upside down C, is the button to switch whether you want to change the temperature or the time. And finally, the last button is the increase button to increase either the time or the temperature. So, let's put in some food, which I've already prepared earlier. We've got some frozen chips in the drawer, which we're going to set to cook, and put the drawer back in. So for this one, we will use a preset for the chips. Now, while the food is cooking, you will get regular time updates. You will also, halfway through the cooking process, be asked to rearrange the food. So you take out the drawer, shake it a bit so the food can move around, and then put it back in. So let's select the potatoes preset, which we'll use for the chips.
Cook potatoes, 180 degrees C, 30 minutes.
Okie dokie. So I will now press the power button.
Start, cook potatoes, 180 degrees C, 30 minutes.
So we are now cooking the chips, and I will be back with you later on to see how the cooking process is going. Right, we've been asked to rearrange food. The timer has paused for 15 seconds. I'll take the drawer out.
Rearrange food.
Shake the chips. Slot the drawer back in. And it will resume. I was told at the 20-minute point that there's 20 minutes remaining. So it does give you time updates more regularly the closer it gets to the finishing time. And the cooking has now resumed, so I will be back in just under 15 minutes to see if the chips are in an edible form. So it has gone to 1 minute, so soon we will have
50 seconds remaining.
Chips ready. It will now alert me every 10 seconds. Now this unit, I recommend placing it in the corner of your kitchen surface, as long as it can be moved forward to leave the fans at the back open.
30 seconds remaining.
We shall see what comes out.
20 seconds remaining.
And the good thing about it is, even if you're not paying attention, every now and again, it will alert you, so you'll always be aware something's going on.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, complete.
I'm going to remove the drawer. Yo, it's not exploded, but we have some chips. If you've got any other questions about the air fryer, feel free to email. It is techtalk@rnib.org.uk. And now I'm going to see what the chips are like.
Hubert Pavalkovich with the talking air fryer. So what's your verdict, Hubert? Should we all rush out and buy one? Or should we wait for the next version? Do you really need an air fryer that talks? I mean, ours has got those rotary dials. You know, you can just feel the notch on the dial. So I haven't got to deal with, you know, touch controls and things like that. What's your recommendation?
I've learned to kind of use my air fryer, because the air fryer that I've demonstrated there was at a friend's house. This one, the one I have at home, is quote-unquote not accessible, but like you say, you can sort of find ways to use it and figure out how it works and, you know, get used to it. So if you have figured out how to use your own air fryer and you don't actually need it, then keep what you're comfortable with, is what I always say. Keep what works. But if you are looking to get into it, I really quite liked it because it gives you a fully accessible experience where you actually are in control of what's going on and of what you're doing. And I really liked it, but I'm going to say don't rush out and get it just yet, because there is a two-draw version that is being released at some point in the next few months. This air fryer only has one draw, so wait a little bit, because you will probably benefit. I certainly find this from my experience, that a two-draw air fryer is a lot better, I find.
Really? I mean, I've never hankered for a second draw in ours. We've got a single draw. Ours is a Tower. I think I've talked about it on Tech Talk previously. The Tower 17071. It's a couple of years old now. Works pretty well. It's a single draw. You know, does the job. What's the benefit of having that second draw? Why do you think that's so important?
Well, what I like is I can cook two things at the same time. So let's say I had a friend round and I made some seasoned pork, but I wanted some chips alongside it. So I put them both in at the same time, so that you didn't kind of have that where it's like, okay, the seasoned pork is ready in the air fryer, but we now need to wait for the pork to go cold because we need to put the chips in. You can put both at the same time. I don't know. I quite like the ability to be able to do two things at the same time, or you can do more of whatever you're doing, for example, if you put it in two drawers as well. So it's something that's not a necessity, but I find it quite convenient when you're cooking two different things at the same time and you want them to all be ready around at the same time.
Callum Stoneman, are you an air fryer person? Do you want a talking one?
Oh yeah, I mean, well, yes, still loving the air fryers. I've got we've got a fancy Ninja one. And ours has got two drawers as well. I've only had the one air fryer, and it's a two drawer. I don't know how I'd manage without the two drawers, to be honest. I'm using that all the time. The other benefit, or at least with ours, it's got like a match thing. So you can put things in your different drawers, set them for different times, but it will sync them up so that they're, say something's in for 25 minutes, but something else is only in for 10 minutes. It will cook the first one for, you know, first 15 minutes and then start the second one cooking, so that everything's ready at the same time as well, which is really nice. As for a talky one though, I mean, yeah, I must admit I really like our Ninja one and I've learned to use it, but it is a little bit of a nightmare in terms of, you can quite easily, because it's got a dial, but it's a digital dial, so you know, you flick through and it just scrolls through the menu, and you can quite easily go, you know, one or two clicks too far if you're not paying particular attention, and obviously then you end up on a different setting to what you intended. So it depends what you've got and what features you want, I suppose. I can see the benefit of this. It's kind of like the talking microwave discussion, isn't it? You know, do we really need it? But I mean, they're still out there, they're still being sold, so clearly some people do like them.
Yeah, and I think for somebody who's maybe lost sight later in life, the confidence that a talking appliance can give you is tremendously reassuring as well. So, yeah, try and get hands-on, I guess, is the message, if you've got the opportunity to do that. Are you into the air fryer, or could you not care less? Let us know. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Callum Stoneman, Hubert Pavalkovic, thanks a lot.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk, or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
We're always interested to hear about blind people who are doing it for themselves, who have started their own businesses and supporting other blind and partially sighted people to live our best lives. And somebody who is doing that in spades is Ajmal Ahmed. And Aj joins us now. Welcome into RNIB Connect Radio, Aj. Before we talk about your business, AAT Solutions, just give us a bit of a sense of your background. You've been working in the assistive technology industry now, I think, for about 15 years, is it?
Yeah, that's right, Dave. I worked for a company, Dolphin Computer Access, where I started out as a tester and then moved on into technical support. So I was dealing with customers with tech issues. And that led on to sort of training clients, training people on Supernova, training the trainers, and then into a products manager role. And then from there, I moved on to a sight loss charity in Worcester as a technology coordinator. And again, doing very similar sort of things, training people on hardware devices, software devices, advising them on sort of different technology that could best suit their needs.
So you've worked in the commercial sector, you've worked in the charity sector. And for you personally, obviously, you use quite a range of assistive technology yourself to get the job done.
Yeah, and that's why I'm really passionate about it, because I use it day in, day out, and I have done for, you know, the last sort of 20, 30 years in some form or another. And without it, it just makes things a lot more difficult and challenging. And I just know how much I get out of it and what I can do now using technology that I couldn't do, you know, all those years ago. So giving other people those tools so they can also, you know, do similar things, whether it's help them navigate around using bus apps or whatever it is, you know, I just want to pass that knowledge on, really.
And do you think there's a difference for us as blind people when we learn from each other?
Yeah, 100%. Because sort of we've been there, we've went through the sort of difficulties, the frustrations of things not working as you expect. Also just understanding what obstacles could come in your way. Little tips and tricks of, okay, well, I know this website doesn't quite read here, but what I do is I will then turn on your JAWS case and I'll do this or tab a couple of times. And even though it says, you know, it doesn't read quite right, so you can just give them little tips because you've done it and you've been there. So, you know, I actually think that's, you know, really essential. And, you know, not to put others down, but sometimes I think it can't really be replicated by someone who doesn't use it day in, day out.
Not really technology, but just in terms of developing a mindset and resilience. You were a Paralympian. You represented Team GB in a number of competitions. Do you think that experience informs your, I mean, mindset seems to be the best term, but how does that help when you're working with a client?
I mean, I was captain, so I was, you know, the leader of the group. I was responsible for making sure everyone was okay, putting an arm around someone when they needed it, motivating them, you know, trying to convey messages that maybe the coach couldn't, or you know, that sort of thing. So I think those skills are definitely transferable, and I do use that because people are very individual and learn at different paces, and it's about finding out what learning style will suit them the best, you know, and then applying that for them.
All this professional and personal experience and your sporting experience, you have channeled that into your business, AAT Solutions, that offers a range of training and support options for blind and partially sighted people at home, in the workplace, in education. Just tell us a bit about the business, Aj, and the services you provide.
Yeah, so predominantly I provide, you know, software training. So that could be using screen readers like JAWS NVDA or screen magnifiers. And that can be for people who are just getting started out. So they've never used a computer before. They've never used any sort of assistive technology before. So we'd start from the basics. Again, it could be people who have used a computer and have just lost their sight, so now need to be introduced to a screen reader or a screen magnifier. It also incorporates not just learning your assistive technology, but how to use it in particular applications that they want to use. So it could be someone in employment who is working with spreadsheets on a daily basis. And again, that's where the sort of lived experience comes in. I can teach them how, you know, spreadsheets are laid out, especially if someone's never seen a spreadsheet or doesn't understand the concept. For me, I found that quite key is when I'm learning something, I like to know how it's laid out visually so I can get that sort of mental image in my mind. And then there'd be certain things, for example, with Excel, where I know, well, it doesn't work quite well with these buttons, but I can do a little workaround. It's those little nuggets of information of workarounds in certain applications, how to find information quickly on the web, that, you know, I think is a, you know, really important and very valuable.
So you're not just teaching keystrokes, you're actually teaching the concepts. Just talk us through what happens when somebody contacts you.
Yeah, so when someone contacts me, we'll have an initial consultation, normally about 30 minutes, and it's really just to find out, you know, what they require. So where they're at now, where they want to get to, what it is that, you know, what apps or what, you know, what tasks they would like to achieve. And from there, we'll create a tailored package, which would be unique to them, and, you know, book in sessions, whether that's a couple of sessions or, you know, ongoing sessions, 4 or 5 sessions. You know, and my motto is, I like to do as little sessions as possible because I don't want people keep coming back, because then ultimately I haven't done my job. So ultimately I want someone who's worked with me that effectively I don't really hear from them again. Well, certainly for not that problem, because I've given the tools to, you know, tackle all the problems. So even if I'm teaching someone Excel or whether navigating on the web, those skills I want them to transfer to other areas. So if they then, you know, come across a new app or a new task, the skills that I've taught them, they can apply it to. And when that happens, that's when I know that, you know, I've really done my job.
I mean, obviously, you're doing this as an independent, you know, person. There are larger companies out there. Just give us a sense of your kind of coverage. Is this all online, or are you able to deliver face-to-face training as well?
Yeah, I'm able to deliver face-to-face so I can travel nationwide. I like to do, you know, in person. I think just more hands-on and building a rapport with that person is valuable. However, you know, I am set up to do remote training and do it on a regular basis. So again, it just goes back to, you know, what suits the individual needs and what they're comfortable with. And sometimes it can be a mix of both. So, you know, maybe the first session's face-to-face and subsequent sessions are online.
Okay, well, that makes sense. And obviously the wider opportunity here is enabling blind and partially sighted people to become more independent, perhaps stay in a job or succeed on a course. How do customers get in contact with you, Aj?
Yeah, so they can email, which would be info@aatsolutions.uk, or they can contact me via the telephone number, which is 07572 990 597. And there's also a contact form on the website, should they choose to do that as well.
Okay, just give us those contact details one more time.
Yep, info@aatsolutions.uk. You can contact me via the website contact page and fill in the web form, or you can call 07572 990 597.
Aj Ahmed, former Paralympian and assistive technology expert from AAT Solutions, thank you so much for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you, Dave.
We've had an email from Nick Stone, who writes, "Hi all, I understand that in December this year, Microsoft will be switching off classic version of Outlook, which will no longer work with Mail. Thunderbird, I find a complete puzzle to operate efficiently. Any advice what to use to access email with JAWS? Callum?"
Yeah, interesting question. So I've been using Thunderbird recently for that reason, because the Outlook as we know it is going away, and it's moving into, it's still going to be Outlook, but it's going to be a web version essentially. And it's, at this moment in time at least, accessible, yes, but very clunky and very inefficient to navigate. I really struggle with it. Hopefully that's going to be addressed before the switch off. The way that Microsoft have been with accessibility previously, I'd like to hope that they're working on it. But in the meantime, yeah, I've been using Thunderbird. Now, I'm using it with NVDA, and there's a couple of add-ons to make it a bit more efficient. But yeah, I've got to be honest, I'm not 100% happy with it, because yeah, it is a bit of a pain to navigate. The NVDA add-on does make it slightly easier, but still, the focus tends to go a bit all over the place. The calendar, even with the add-on, is a mess. I really struggle with the calendar side of it. But I'm not too sure, especially with JAWS. So I am looking into this. So I'm going to try out a few different mail clients, and I'll try and come back to you. Unless you guys have got any other thoughts, obviously.
Yes, see, I tend to, if I'm checking my emails on Windows, I just tend to use the Gmail website because I do love the Outlook client. I find it really, really good, and I've always enjoyed using it. I'm quite sad that it's actually being turned off, but yeah, I use the Gmail website. It's not great, but if I'm on Windows and I need to check my emails, I find it just works well and does enough of what I need it to. But no, I'm quite sad to see Outlook go, so I'd be actually keen to see an alternative that's actually quite accessible. Thunderbird I've not used probably for about 12 years, so I'm not actually sure what it's even like these days.
Okay, well, we'd be interested to hear what you use, what your recommendations are, and hopefully the new Outlook experience will improve over time. Keep us posted on that one. Thank you again, Nick, for your email. Neil writes,
"I'm running. It's only an hour show, remember?"
Yeah. Well, the new running show, I'm sure, will be along very soon. I meant to email before, but not gotten round to it. But this latest article on Glidance inspired me to do it. I know Dave is also a runner like me, so my question is more to do with running using Glide. I have a local park which has a firm gravel path all the way round, and in fact it is used weekly by Parkrun. I wonder if Glide would be able to guide me round this. And Neil, I suppose the first thing is to just explain a little bit about Glide. So Glide is a robotic guiding aid. So there's a couple of wheels on the bottom and then you hold a handle. And so the handle is at sort of waist height. So a similar kind of height to where a guide dog harness handle would be located. And you hold it with one hand. So I guess you'd have to imagine running in that position with one hand down, you know, at that height, almost like running with a, I don't know, a vacuum cleaner or something like that.
That's the description that I've heard about Glide and, well, the Glide mobility aid. I haven't got hands on with this yet. I don't think many people have, but the description I've heard is that it looks a bit like a vacuum cleaner.
Yeah, and then there's the weight of the device as well. It does roll quite smoothly. I've tried it indoors on, you know, carpeted area. But when you get onto a more uneven terrain, I think you're then going to feel the weight of it a little bit more. So that's really going to affect your running form, because obviously when you're running naturally, your arms are swinging a bit more, you know, you're not sort of hunched over holding onto a handle that's down at sort of waist height. So I'm not sure how suitable it would be. The other point here, of course, is we've not really seen the technology proven. At the exhibition I was at, the Glide device was controlled with a remote control. So there was a sighted person walking alongside operating the, you know, the directions. So I haven't actually proven the technology yet as far as my own experience is concerned. Now, maybe others have used a working prototype. So at this point, I'm afraid I'm not going to recommend it for running. That could well change in the future. But yeah, always keen to hear different ways that people try to make running more accessible. There is, of course, the Ramble Tag as an alternative to the venerable running tether that you can get. The Ramble Tag sort of goes on your upper arm, or the upper arm of your guide, I should say, and gives you a handle that you can kind of hold on to. Some people use that. And then, of course, recently we heard about a chap at the Manchester Marathon running without using any kind of tether, just having verbal directions from his guide. I don't
that
know.
That blows me away. Yeah. I struggle walking doing that.
Well, I would be worried about what happens in those noisy parts of the race, right? If you go to a big city marathon, we just had London Marathon, of course, and the music's brilliant, the crowds are brilliant, but it does mean that there are times when it is quite difficult to hear verbal instructions from your guide, so then you are going more on feel.
It's interesting, though. Like this, I think we will get to a point where this technology can actually guide us around. I've always been a bit sceptical about all these robot guide dogs and robot mobility aids. You know, they've always seemed like a great concept, but never actually really worked, in my opinion. I think we will get to a point where we will see this actually become useful. It's just interesting whether it'll be in the form factor, as you said, appropriate for running. That's a good question.
Well, Neil, good luck with all your running. Thank you so much for contacting us here at Tech Talk. If you, like Neil or Nick, would like to get in touch, then it's the usual email address, techtalk@rnib.org.uk.
Last week on Tech Talk, we spoke to Troy Attilio from Aira about their new Access AI feature. And I'm not going to go over all the details here because Troy covered it beautifully in the interview. But essentially, it's a new feature where you can take a photo, get an AI-generated description of that photo. You can ask questions and follow up and get more information. But what makes this slightly different to other offerings out there is that you can also request a verification, which will mean the Aira agents can have a look at the image and the message that you've sent, and they can verify whether the AI was accurate. So they can give a thumbs up and say, yeah, that's all good, the AI description was accurate. Or they can say, actually, no, it's actually this, or, you know, it didn't quite get this right. And I'd encourage you to go back and have a listen to last week's episode and last week's interview if you can, because it was a really interesting conversation about where this feature came from, and there was a bit of a discussion on privacy and how it impacts that, as well as just AI and Aira in general, really. So it was a really good conversation. But really, the best way to hear how these features work and when and where you might want to use it is to hear it in action. So a couple of days ago, I was doing some prep for that night's tea or dinner, depending on where you're from, and I had some chicken breast that I wanted to just double check the expiry date on before I cooked them. And I thought, you know what, this is a brilliant use for Access AI here, because, you know, yes, you can take the photo, but you've also got the option of someone double checking it. So here's how that went. So I've gone into the Aira Explorer app, and I'm on the homepage of the app at the minute. And at the bottom left, bottom middle-ish of the screen, there's a new tab called Access AI, so I'm going to just look for that.
Access AI, tab 2 of 4 button.
There it is, so I'll double tap.
Access AI, selected.
Now, if you haven't got access to this yet, then you will still have the tab, but all you'll have is information on a brief overview of what Access AI is and the link to get the form to join the waiting list. But I have got early access to this, so I'm just going to talk you through what we've got here. There's only a few buttons, so I'll just quickly talk you through these.
Access AI heading.
So there's the heading at the top.
Quick capture and send button.
Quick capture and send. That will, when you double tap that, it will just take a photo using your rear camera. And it will just, as soon as you double tap it, it will just snap a photo and give you a description of what it sees.
Detailed capture button.
Detailed capture. Now this will open up the viewfinder. So if you're familiar with like the iOS camera app, it will basically give you a mini version of the camera app, really, so you can see what you're about to take. Rather than taking a photo straight away, if you've got some vision, you can see in the viewfinder what you're about to take a photo of. And if you're using VoiceOver, like I am, then you'll get those little hints and descriptions that VoiceOver gives you. So, you know, it might kind of briefly describe what's in focus, if there's any faces in the frame or anything. So if you want a bit more precision about the images that you're taking, then you could use the detailed capture and then take a picture when you're ready.
Choose from gallery button.
And then the last option here is choose from gallery. So that will let you bring in a photo from your library and get a description of that. You can also do that from the share sheet as well, which I'm not going to show you here. But basically, wherever there's a, if you're in your library or if you're on social media or a web page, wherever you can share a photo, just click share and then the list of options that you've got to share an image, they should be described with Access AI, and that will do the same thing. So we don't really need to be too precise with this one, so I'm just going to do the quick capture and send. So I'm holding my phone a little bit above the package here. I'm using an external microphone, so you won't get too much rustling around, but I'm just kind of feeling the package, feeling for the label, and then just moving my phone a few inches above the
the package, and hopefully that feels to me like it's got a good view. But if it can't find the information that we're looking for, then it will tell us as well. So that feels about right. So I'm just going to do the quick capture and send.
Quick capture and send. Access AI is writing of actions available image, a package of food.
So it started to give us a description there, but I stopped it because that was VoiceOver's built-in description. I'll explain in a minute. We should get a response in a second, which I'll let you hear, and then I'll explain what goes on there.
The image shows a package of Asda tender chicken breast fillet portions. The packaging includes a label indicating it is a product from the UK and has a red tractor assurance mark, indicating that the chicken was farmed responsibly. The packaging also displays symbols for British poultry and a freezer safe indication. The price tag shows £3.50, and there is a use by date of the 2nd of April visible. The package contains 300 grams of chicken. Would you like more details about this product?
Wow. Okay. So the description that I stopped when I interrupted it was, so what happens is when you take an image, sometimes the voiceover focus gets placed on the image that you've sent. And then if you've got image descriptions turned on in voiceover settings, it tries to give you a description using that, you know, using the built-in voiceover image description, which you can definitely tell the difference of. So that was the one that started off saying, you know, a package of food. It was probably going to give us something brief, like a package of food on a wooden surface or something. You know, it wasn't going to give us that amount of detail. Let's put it that way. And that response, we've not needed to edit that. The time that you heard there was how quick the response came back. So pretty quick. Now it said there's a use by date visible of the 2nd of April. That's not accurate. It's the 17th of April when I'm recording this. And I bought these a couple of days ago. So unless the shop have sold me chicken that's way past its date, that's not accurate. But that's okay. So what we can do, it told us the use by date anyway, but I may as well show you how to respond to that and write a message. And we'll try and double check this. So let's just go through what we've got on this screen. So we've got the image that I just sent.
The image shows a package of Asda tender chicken breast fillet portions.
That's the description that we've just heard. Now if I flick to the right.
End of messages. Heading. Detailed capture. Button.
So you can add another photo there if you wanted to.
Choose from gallery. Button.
Choose from gallery.
Type a message. Text field.
And then a text field to type a message. And then after that, there's just a send button. So this text field is just your standard text field. You can use dictation, you can use the on-screen keyboard, a Bluetooth keyboard, whatever way you want. Any way you can enter text, you can do that here. So I'm just going to go in here and say.
Text field is editing. What is the use by date? Character mode, insertion point at end.
What is the use by date? And I just used Braille screen input to get that in. So we'll send that message.
Send message button. Access AI is actions available image. A package of meat on a blue tray. 10.
That's the voiceover description again. We're just waiting for
the use by date on the package of Asda tender chicken breast fillet portions is the 2nd of April.
Okay. Still insisting that it's the 2nd of April. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to go to that message, the most recent one.
The image shows a package of what is the use by date? The use by date on the package of Asda tender chicken breast fillet portions is the 2nd of April.
Okay, now what we can do here, we can use the, they've made really good use of the actions rotor. So if we do a one finger flick up or down, we've got a bunch of options. So I'll just flick down to cycle through these.
Share, copy, mark as helpful, mark as not helpful.
So a couple of ways of providing them feedback there. You can mark it as helpful or not helpful.
Verify with an error, agent, activate, default.
And then we're back to the activate, the standard default option. So the one that we're interested in is verify with agent, because I'm pretty certain that's not accurate. And if it is accurate, then I'll be annoyed. So we could go back down through these, or we can just go up because it's the last option in the list. So I'm just going to flick up.
Verify with an error, agent.
So I'll double tap this.
Pending verification. Pending verification.
Okay. So it's pending
verification requested.
So it's pending verification. Now what that's done, that's sent off the images that I sent, along with the messages that we've sent and received. And a human, an error agent, is going to double check that and give us a response. So we'll see how long this takes as well. If we need to edit it, then I'll let you know. I'll let you know roughly how long it took.
The response needed some changes. Here is our agent response. The use by date on the package of Asda tender chicken breast fillet portions is the 21st of April.
Ah, now that sounds about right. So I would say that took about a minute to come through that response. and I just stayed on the chat screen. I'm not sure if you can leave the app and get a notification when they've responded. I would assume you can't, but I'm not certain of that. But that took about a minute. And obviously, that is going to take longer than the AI in some cases, because the IRA agents, as far as I understand it, are looking at this between calls. So I would say that's not too bad. So with a mixture of AI and the agent verification, I got the information that I need, and I didn't have to use up any of my IRA minutes either, which is great.
Callum Stoneman there demonstrating the new Access AI feature from IRA. Callum, obviously, we talk about AI pretty much every week, it feels like, and we've got Be My AI, there's the various AI features in Seeing AI. I mean, everybody's at it, right? How do we sort the wheat from the chaff? How do you choose which one's the right one for you?
I don't think there's a good answer to that at this stage. I mean, the obvious thing that makes the IRA Access AI different, as we've said a couple of times and as we've heard there, is the ability to get your image and your description double-checked, you know, by an actual person. But other than that, they're all fairly similar. They're all doing the same thing, just in slightly different ways. Like, for example, the IRA one, most of them use ChatGPT. So I think certainly Be My AI, I'm pretty sure Seeing AI as well uses the GPT model. IRA are doing a bit of a mix between ChatGPT and Google Gemini for their descriptions. You don't really have any control over which one you're going to get. I think they must just be doing a bit of a split, you know, and just trying to see which one gets the best results. Similar with the Jaws Picture Smart, you know, they're doing that sort of thing as well. So I don't know, I think at this stage, if you want something where you need it, the answer to be right, then maybe use the IRA one and use that verification feature if you need to. Other than that, I think it's basically just, in some ways, it's just pick your interface, really. Pick the one that you like the most, the one that you feel most comfortable using.
Hubert, do you have any pearls of wisdom to share on this topic?
No, I'd agree with Callum on this one, really, because I think what I always find is, I appreciate why a lot of apps are doing the same thing, you know, they want to keep up with competitors and all this, but I always just find it frustrating where there's so many apps doing the same thing, and it's like, well, which one do you use? And you have to just go with whatever one works better for you interface-wise. That's the best way for it, because a lot of them do pretty much the same thing. I mean, they like to say they don't, but it's, yeah, the only difference really is that sort of human integration, which is quite good if you're taking a picture of something important, I'd say. I think that's the one thing where a lot of people I find take pictures of documents to copy certain information, and, you know, that you really do want to check with someone. I personally find there's certain things that I just don't trust AI with reading correctly, and that may be me being a bit skeptical, but I always find that if you're taking pictures of something you need to copy accurately, having that kind of human person to double check your photo if you want is quite handy, just in case the AI just doesn't get it right sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, I find that they tend to struggle with the example that I used there with use by dates and cooking instructions. You know, it always tends to struggle with that, to these AI services. So I think for me, that's when I would double check, you know, if I want to cook something, I might take the picture, and sometimes you can just tell, you know, you can tell that it sounds about right. That there where it was saying the use by date was the 2nd of April. Well, I'd only bought them on like the 15th or 16th. So I'm thinking, well, that can't be right. You know, so you get a sense of when it's right and when it's not right, and just being able to quickly, just rather than having to ring the agent or having to then go to a sighted person and say, oh, hang on, it's saying this. Is that right? Just do it within the app and just wait for a response.
Yeah, indeed. Well, of course, generating descriptions of images is not the only use of AI. You could be forgiven for thinking it was if you only looked at these apps. Of course, you can use AI to generate voices, music, presentations, all sorts of stuff. So let us know how you are using it if you found any interesting use cases. That's it from Tech Talk this week. Thank you, as ever, for your company. Don't forget to like and share. It just remains for me to thank our team, Callum Stoneman, Hubert Pavalkovich, and from myself, Dave Williams. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
See you next week.
Bye-bye.